opportunity to address the portfolio committee on the issues of the search and seizure provisions, the power to subpoena, secondment, and the making of regulations. Now, I don't have a problem with us in the hearing him, although some of you may feel differently. I do have a problem where they say they will meet us on the 11th. I don't think it's for them to determine for us when they should see us, given that the office is just down the road, less than 100 meters from here. Yes. And so it shouldn't be difficult for them to come across and engage with us. Ms. Smuts takes it further and suggests that the CEO engage with Mr. Nabiskakny and his team. That's another option that can be looked at. I see nothing wrong with that, Mr. Nabiskakny, if you engage with the CEO. But I think at the end of the day, we may still want to engage with them. I'm not in favor of the 11th. I think they should come and see us at the soonest, sometime this week. So Brian, if you can get in touch any points, I'll call the chair and make it clear that the 11th is out. It's just gone on. Firstly, Advocate Holomisa, and then the Smith.
Thank you, Senator. I also don't have a problem with us meeting them. They request that we meet on the CSN information. But I just want to understand the policy that we follow when situations like this arise. Any deals are subjected to public scrutiny. And it's not just the institution alone that is interested in what is contained in the deal. And when we conduct public hearings, we allow anyone who has something to say, so that they can even respond to what they have to say. Now, if we invite them, now we're not going to be required also to allow others who want to come and respond to their submissions. I just want to start with you on this question of policy or
community. All right. I'll address you on that point just now.
Sir, I would, whilst respecting the minimum forces concerned, I would suggest that is not the case. What we are asking is simply clarification, further clarification of something we have already discussed with the Commission in open session as part of this legislative process. That is the clarification on whether they consider the powers of subpoena necessary for deterrence, or in addition also the powers of search and seizure, which we think we are not persuaded are necessary and do not think have ever been used. The other issue is highly technical, the matter of whether one needs ministerial regulation to govern all sorts of staffing and other matters. And that is no doubt the relic of the old Act, the 1994 Act. Constitutional institutions by now have all evolved their own, they are fully independent, so they've evolved their own staffing procedures. And so it really is, it's simply technical. All we want to know is from the CEO, what is the position that Bert Chains at the moment? I would be willing to, yes, that in fact they have developed procedures that have bear no resemblance to whatever the ministerial regulations in 1994 were. So I think it is as simple as a technical conversation by email between Mr. Nabiskakny and Kyle. And the other matter, I honestly don't see why it can't be dealt with also in email correspondence, which could then be tabled as is then in the public domain. These are clarifications
and
technical matters.
I think the question raised by Mr. Olamisa is a procedural one. The bill was widely publicized. The committee advertised for written submissions. And amongst the people who made written submissions, who were invited to address us, was the Human Rights Commission. And whilst we understand that they are a key role player in the legislation, what Mr. Olamis has asked is, in the same way that we are now giving the Human Rights Commission a second bite of the cherry, as it were, are we now going to give everyone else a second bite of the cherry? That's the concern he has. Mrs. Shepherd. Mrs. Shepherd.
Yes, I was going to say that the point is that we are not getting permission from them. It's not that they are asking for a second bite of the cherry.
Yes, but
I think that's a crucial
thing. They sent us the letter.
No, but they sent us a letter in response to questions that we had raised via the drafters, because we wanted to know certain things from them as to whether they felt they needed the certain seizure powers, because they were not in the original bill that was published, changing those powers. So we have now asked them whether they are necessary, because we feel that they aren't. So I think that is a fundamental distinction between them just coming to us and asking for a second bite.
We are asking further clarification on questions we've already asked them when they appeared before us. And I'm not sure I understood the Honourable Chairman correctly just now. Search and seizure has been in the Act since 1994. It was. They're not going to change it. It's the old search and seizure part. We are asking the question.
Why do you need them?
Have they ever been used to seize us? Are they necessary? And the reason why we need the clarification is that I didn't take notes when Advocate Mishwana answered. It was my question when he answered my question. I didn't take notes, so it isn't clear. Advocate Lovascasny has kindly gone through the records in the minutes, but it isn't clear whether they were talking about subpoena or search and seizure. It's simple. It's clarification. We don't need another hour of pressing about.
Right. So the request came from us. So,
yes, sir. Well, the explained my question quite properly, but I had been of the understanding that they had one who wanted to come. Now I see that we invited them. Yes. That is slightly different. You know, the principle might still arrive at the question. Because when we have had all the participants, the interested parties, the department is there to answer questions of operation and things like that. But then there's nothing wrong again if the real reason is there. Well, it was my question that you just want clarity, and if you ask, we invite them, not the other way around them coming forward.
All right. We'll ask them. They've set a date of the 11th. I still don't think that's reasonable as far as our program is concerned. But can I ask all of you then to apply your minds? Some of you have already made up your minds, and that's understandable. And with very good reason. I'm glad Mr. Swart is here. Please, I need to clarify your mind on this matter. Should the South African Human Rights Commission have search and seizure powers? Firstly. Secondly, should they have the power to subpoena a member of the public or anybody else? The other questions I think we can deal with quite comfortably. They're not really regulations and secondment. they can make their own case there as far as those two are concerned. All right. Mr. Swart, we No, we don't have to apologize. Just where you arrived, you were dealing with Mrs. Slutz and Mrs. Shaker reminded us that, in fact, we had requested the Human Rights Commission to explain certain matters, powers of search and seizure, subpoena, secondment, and regulations, and they've written to us, you might have received the letter, telling us that they will see us on the 11th. We'll get in touch with them and tell them the 11th is unreasonable, and then we'll engage with them. In the meantime, I know you have very strong views about search and seizure and subpoena, but you're welcome to repeat them when the time arises. But I've asked everyone else on the portfolio committee to think seriously about these matters, so that when the Human Rights Commission does appear before us, our thoughts on the matter are very clear. Consideration has been given to why can't they go to a court like everybody else? And I think that's the question they will have to answer. If you want to enter somebody's premises, go to court and get permission from the court. Yes. How else would they do it?
Yes. Now that message is going to be conveyed, they must come sooner. Then they're going to say, but their diaries are already booked. Then what? Then we discuss it all over again. Could I not persuade you that their request to appear in person must not necessarily be acceded to? Why can they not answer our questions in writing and email them? I mean, we could have the whole thing done and dusted and what's in there.
Sure, we'll do that, Ms. Smith. If there's a difficulty with diaries and program changes.
Do they have a specific date that they'll reset? Yes, I'll be there.
Yes,
that's one of the things.
That's
one of the things. And all of the things. I'm sure they can answer us now.
Sure.
We want to finalize the
work. Yes. All right. Okay, Mr. Labuschagne. Take us through. Is there anything that you have to take us through? On the Human Rights Commission Bill?
Chairperson, thanks. On this point of citizen seizure, I just want to bring it to the attention of the committee that the Public Protector Act, as well as the Commission on Gender Equality Act, has similar kind of provisions. So, and I can make copies available for the committee's convenience if it's required.
Yes.
So there are already existing provisions in other acts that are similar. I haven't completed it word by word, but the heading of Section 7A of the Public Protector is entering upon premises by the Public Protector, and the GE Act is entering and search of premises and attachment and removal of articles. So they are already similar provisions on the statute at the moment. So the committee must just keep that in mind when the Human Rights Commission or members of the Commission appear before the committee.
If you could just set those out in a little document for us, Mr. Lansdowne. If you haven't already done so, provide them to Mr. Manji. Mr. Foxy.
Sir, I think the point to bear in mind is the following. The Human Rights Commission Act was the first act ever done in the Democratic Parliament. The search and seizure provisions there took up most of the 80 hours that you, sir, spent on that. The search and seizure provision in the Act became the matrix for search and seizure provisions in all other laws. You know, all the new democratic stuff about being polite before you kick someone's door down, you must knock, you must go, daylight up, all that stuff. So this was the matrix. Yes, of course it appears in the CGE, because after this Act was done, the CGE Act, which is problematic in many respects, was done, and it was also put in. To me it's neither here nor there. It must come out of the CGB as well, quite frankly. It may be a different question whether the Public Protector needs these things. No, we won't go there today. But it may be a different question to which we will apply our minds when that act is reviewed. But the point is, these search and seizure provisions are the matrix. They were carried forward not only into Chapter 9 laws, but into other statutes dealing with criminal procedure and so forth. This is the matrix that we're carrying through. The first question here is whether commissions under Chapter 9 ought to have these powers at all. And we are now sufficiently far down the track, 2 decades later, to look back and say, was this really necessary? We had a long discussion about that the other day. So question number one, have you ever used these things? Question number two is, do you want them? For what do you want them? And as I said, Miswana's answer said, they have a strong deterrent effect, but it's my fault. I failed to ask him to distinguish between files of subpoena, which I know do have a deterrent effect, and files of search and seizure. So the only question they have to answer us is, do they actually threaten people with search and seizure? Do they have a real sense that has assisted them? I think the chances are not. I'm sure it's just the subpoena part. But so whatever we do here, we will likely duplicate in the other act. Each one has to be considered on its own merit, of course.
Just for the record, it did not take up the bulk of the 80 hours that we spent. No, it did not.
Did you say that?
I was there. Just for only for PNG and the media, it did not take up the bulk of the 80 hours that we spent. In fact, it spent far more than 80 hours. All right. Anybody else? Mr. Sitt.
I think Ombudsman has captured the suggestion very well. The question, I know that Mashwana referred to it being a deterrent effect for state departments.
Yes.
But as we know, this applies across the board. And that was my concern. Now, I would like to hear, the issue of, I think it's very pertinent, has it ever been used? I haven't heard in my almost 15 years on the Justice Committee of them ever reporting. They say they have used the subpoena power for state departments to appear before them, but they've never used the search and seizure power. And these are far-reaching powers. And so that is why I would like to hear from them as to why they need it. Has it ever been used in the 15 years? And it's interesting, the background that the Smut gives, that it was almost a generic, the first one, and then it was followed by the other pieces of legislation that was set up. And maybe there was concerns that it might have to be used, there might be recalcitrant people that need search and seizures, but it doesn't seem to be the need. So when we're doing the legislation, we, it's incumbent upon us as members of Parliament to look whether it is necessary, and whether the subpoena power is enough. So I think, Chair, it's useful for us to engage on the issue yet again. We'll be looking at the whole legislation. We've engaged every section. And I think that it's useful for us to continue debating the need for this and to hear from the Human Rights Commission. I'm sure they're going to say they've never used it before. Well, I'm sure they will say that.
They have said that.
Have they said that?
Yes.
Okay. Well, that then begs the question, why is it in legislation at all? And, so I think that is helpful. You did also mention the issue of the alternative position that they have to go by a court order. Now, that is already there, that they have to get a court order. But does that still necessitate the inclusion of this power? And under certain circumstances, you can then go and have a warrant of search and seizure without a court order. So that is as the Section 17 sets it out. Well, thank you, Chair, for that.
Another impression that instead you should go and apply all money for you make right away.
Well, I'm not going to stop you.
The Commission has been invited to come and explain a bit on what the experience has been to find a way to get to this particular position. Because I also would like to know as to who is the reason for right acceptance by the existence of this particular provision. As I understand, as you corrected, when you is in a board like this one, when you have to exercise attention to that, how it has to apply, does it not? Because to be able to exercise that right or delay, just go ahead.
That's the concern.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, what happens when they look in that if they happen to crash and sleep, the property of protection they believe is violated with some human rights, then know the cost, you know, so I said, well, my wife said legally it's a fear. They just want the fear of having the power. And then the point that has been made, that for instance, if they have not used it, why do we continue to have it in the law then? But the question is, what is that arises the situation in the future? And they need that kind of power and transfer. What harm does it do to anyone if it is there in the future? Does it make the deal untidy? Or what is like this? There's some light that is threatened by this kind of thing. But as I say, it would be much more interesting to hear from them, because they keep complaining that some departments are not responding, some institutions are not responding. And they'll ask the question, why don't you go ahead and do the necessary? That's similar to the one that you do. But I'm saying that who's patent, who's in charge of rights and patent rights, which the extent of this provision in the act.
Should I try, Mr. Swart?
Yes.
Save me the...
I think the concern has been expressed that there are very wide powers in the act, and we are seeing, and the example that I gave is, for example, the Catholic Church holds certain views on abortion, which some person might lay a complaint against the Catholic Church. And in order to investigate that complaint, the Human Rights Commission might want to then look at the books and go into the background and the doctrine of the Catholic Church. There is already a present issue in the media relating to Joshua Generation Church, and a certain issue relating to moderate parental chastisement, which is thanking. A complaint has been laid with the Human Rights Commission. They are busy investigating that complaint. But in terms of the present section, they could then go and search and seize the church and go into the whole church's background and find out doctrinally, which the state has avoided doing in the past. But, so that is the concern that is expressed. Also, one takes political parties. There are human complaints that have been laid against political parties. We know the DA in the Western Cape with the toilet issue. In terms of these powers, you can then go and search and seize the DA's documents relating to the investigation of the complaint. So it can be a wide power that is there. It can be abused. I'm not saying it is being abused. I'm saying it can be abused in the future. And that is why it's incumbent upon us as members of Parliament to look, why is the power there? If there is recalcitrant witnesses that avoid the person investigating a complaint, they have the powers of subpoena. Do they need search and seizure powers? Do they need to break down doors and allow the compensation under Section 18, which is compensation for damage? And so we just need to be wary when we're looking at that. Those are examples that are not far-fetched. They are at present in the practical situation and in the public domain.
The thought, Mr. Honourable, if you can just visualize a situation where the Human Rights Commission breaks down the door of the Joshua Doctrine Church. It's a church, a place of worship. And of all people, the Human Rights Commission is entering in the manner that it is. I think, aside from the actual legal principle, but let me hear you.
Yes, sir. Well, it would, within that, indicate the big, if before they exercise national power, they comply to the court. I know, for instance, myself, that there will be situations where that kind of power would violate some cultural practices. For instance, they go to an initiation round.
Yes.
When they believe that the boy is a thing, they should have. And then they stumble upon some information that is truly only to go to court. But I don't think we want to end up weakening these institutions by taking away a power that they might need in some. As long as there's going to be some kind of a mechanism so that they don't have to use the mechanism, but applying to court would be one such a mechanism for the use of the power. And I don't think having a power to defend something means that you are also, or are you authorized to break down doors and break them back?
Yes.
Yeah, well, as long as the court is first, you can go ahead.
That's a last thought, perhaps, because I mean, these people must give us an answer, so we don't waste time like this. But forums like these are really appropriate to criminal investigations, to police and others. I mean, what is this? Is a human rights body without any power to make binding findings. It's just the long and the short of it is that a power of search and seizure seems to me inappropriate. For a body like this. It's just it's in the wrong place. And that's why I think it should come out. And the simple question is, A, have you ever used it? I think they told us now. B, do you really need it? We're going to say, oh, well, maybe it will have a nice deterrent effect. And then we still have to decide, is it appropriate here or isn't it? I don't think it's appropriate.
Except for the public.
I didn't say that. I said it would be the separate consideration.
Deliberation.
I'm just wondering whether it might be useful to ask our parliamentary researchers, content advisors, to just find out some international examples of other human rights bodies, what kind of powers they have, and compare.
All right. And I guess that applies to the gender commission. I can't imagine a gender commission having a search and seizure, right? Anyway. All right. We'll hear then whether it's through a written communication or having them appear before us. By the way, we'll... can you leave me to deal with the actual date when they come?
Just provided you could have a room at 5 a.m.
No. And I'm really opposed to the 11th. I accept that we asked them, but well, I would have thought that they would have said tomorrow. You know, quickly, let's deal with it now. But of course they're busy.
But that's actually not the right.
Well, they're proposing it as the 11th.
That's a private.
On a Friday?
Yeah. On a Friday.
We haven't agreed to
that. It's on the committee program.
Yes, it's on the committee program.
We can ask them to answer the questions. That's all we're still asking. Mm-hmm. Answer the questions, put it in an email. In writing, and we can fix it.
Okay. All right. Will you do that on our behalf, Mr. Lubuskafi? Or do you want me to contact them and set out the issues so that they respond in writing ahead of the meeting? And whenever we meet with them, then we will have received their response.
But we're going to finish this before the meeting.
Yeah, well.
Chairperson, we have already raised the issues of offering for a response. And you were informed that they will interact directly with the committee. So I don't think from the department side we can do that.
All right.
And then just another issue. I wonder whether there's somebody of the commission present here at the meeting today so that he or she can sort of convey the views that have been expressed here. I don't know. I know it's not for me to ask the question, but then maybe it would have been appropriate for somebody to be here.
Is there someone from the commission present? Not today. All right. Okay.
John, I'm sure John put these questions in writing too. Yeah. So there's a document. The document now goes to the chairperson, who picks up the phone and says, here are the questions, we'd like to answer. What is the problem about putting them in line?
I sent an email to the CEO regarding the regulations. Mr. Ollis sent an email to the CEO regarding the citizen seizure, and the response that we received was that they will interact directly with the committee. So I don't think from the department side there's much
enough
that we can do.
Just provide me with copies of those emails you sent. Business close. All right. Okay. What else is there, Mr. Lowe-Scaffi?
Well, on the right of nature, I think that the committee can now vote on the last commission.
Mr. Swart and then Mr. Flood.
The other issue was Section 18, which was the payment of compensation. So obviously if we delete 17, then 18 is no longer a problem. That's in the light of note. But 18 was the compensation from the National Revenue Fund. Now that is a problem, because that would make this a money bill. And I think that that obviously is something that we are opposed to.
Now, we already agreed to take out sub 1 and sub 3 of 18. The difficulty is we don't yet have a clean document, as it were, and I've no doubt that you, the gentlemen, were waiting, but I don't. I'm sure that were you waiting for the Human Rights Commission responses? I don't have a clean document.
We've got one that's amended.
No.
Yes. But that's not the clean document.
No, we don't have a clean one yet. But you are the proposal, so let's go.
Yes, I did prepare a document which I sent to the committee clerk yesterday morning for distribution and discussion today, where I, to the best of my ability, attempted to capture all the committee's direct instructions, number one. Secondly, proposals made by individual members, and thirdly, proposals made by the Human Rights Commission itself. That document contains various options on certain clauses of the bill. So I don't know whether that document has been distributed, but I've seen it in the committee clock yesterday morning.
No, we haven't received it yet, Mr. Lovescott. The clerk has just gone off to check with Mr. Amalo, but the short answer is we haven't received it.
Chairperson, I do have a document with me, so if you can just print in my copies, because we cannot proceed on the discussion of this bill without the committee being in possession of this document.
All right, Ms. Smuts?
Yeah. May I just, no, we don't have the document, so we can't proceed. I wanted to raise just one last thought with you. And it also arises from the fact that this act was, the original act was done immediately after the transition. And I want to ask you whether it isn't time that we changed a certain approach, and it is the following. In clause 5, the composition of the commission. If you remember that clause says the commission will consist of so many people, we think it's going to be 8, who must be South African citizens, fit and proper, have a record of commitment to human rights, people with applicable knowledge. And then we've taken out all sorts of things. But the map I want to take you to is sub 8. Which deals with the resignation of members. A member may resign from office by submitting 3 calendar months written notice. But then in B, a member is regarded as having resigned if that member accepts nomination for the National Assembly, NCOP, is appointed an office bearer of a political party, or is an office bearer of a political party, an MP, an NCOP MP, an MPL, etc. Now, I want to ask you, I mean, it is frankly unthinkable that a sitting Chapter 9 commissioner should make themselves available for political office to run for office. It is simply unthinkable. And all of this is an overhang of those early days. It is also to, it has always been unthinkable to us in the VP and then the DA, that a sitting MP should go straight into a Chapter 9 institution. Now, that was not the majority position. In fact, on the very first Human Rights Commission, Dr. Max Coleman went straight from the Green Leather Ventures onto the commission. I think there may even have been another. And all of that was part of the time that we were living through, where a very great many excellent people had been actively involved in extra-parliamentary politics, then ran for election in 1994, therefore became MPs, and the need then arose to have all sorts of office bearers in bodies like the Chapter 9. But my question to you is it not now time to change that? It has always been the ANC position since then that, in fact, a certain amount of revolving door is to be expected. In other words, that politicians go into all sorts of bodies. Politicians can move away from such bodies and run for office. But it is clearly not desirable. Our position, for what it's worth, historically has been that there must be at least a period of 2 years after an MP leaves Parliament before they become eligible. And we would certainly never, ever have tolerated the idea of a sitting Chapter 9 commissioner now running for office. So what I'm asking you is it not time to reconsider this? I mean, it's not thinkable. I mean, no person who is a politician should be eligible in the first place for appointment. And the question would then arise, shouldn't there be a subsection 5.2 which uses the normal formulation that a person is not eligible for appointment if they are mad, bankrupt, or a politician. You know, it's a standard thing. We've just put it into the Secrecy Act, for example. And in this case, literally mad, bankrupt, or a politician. You shouldn't be eligible. That's what we did for the classification review panel, that wonderful thing that we invented in the not the secrecy form, at the instance of the ANC, who then invited us to draft it, and Steve Swart did most of the work. We said, fine, you're not eligible if you're mad, bankrupt, or a politician. Now, we should surely have something similar, in my view, for the Chapter 9. So there should be an extra little eligibility clause. And then what I'm pleading with you is to consider whether we don't take out HB. It's not, to me, thinkable that a Chapter 9 commissioner, or any of the Chapter 9s, you know, private protector, or the Auditor General, or anybody on the IEC, how can they suddenly run for office, appear on the list of a political party? It's unthinkable. They are people who, under oath, observe only the Constitution and the law. They are independent. So I would really plead with you to simply remove HB altogether, and we simply deal with resignation under more normal circumstances, give three months notice or whatever. Because I think we've moved on. It's 20 years later now. It shouldn't be like this. If we take the concept of independence seriously, people should have their distance. We shouldn't be appointing politicians in the first place. Certainly no sitting member of an independent body can up and go and run for office for a political party.
So what you're saying is...
Even MP?
Yes. Please hear me.
Please hear me.
If the member concerned resigns, he or she resigns, the resignation is acceptable, they then no longer hold him in office. Then that's okay.
Well, I personally don't think it's okay, but it's not
right.
Something you can control.
Yeah.
Whereas what this says is that they are regarded as having resigned, if they accept nomination for the National Assembly or the NCRP, or are appointed as an office bearer of a political party.
It's a pity that the document has not been distributed, that I sent to the committee block yesterday, but I have prepared an option for this qualification to become a member. For example, if EOC is in the service of the state, we haven't faked insolvents, anyone mentally unsound of mind. And I've also prepared an option where we only delete clause 8B3, I think, which was also one of Ms. Smuts' proposals previously. So I have prepared options as far as that is concerned. I don't think we can take this point any further before the committee or the members of the committee has seen my proposed options.
Law in fact, it's it should be here.
Anybody else on this point? No. Mr. Donovan.
May I wait for the option?
Yeah. I think so. All right. I don't know if there's anything else, any point in taking this further until we've received the documents Mr. Labuschagne refers to. In which case, what should we do? Go on to the other one. Which other one? Alright.
I do have a clean copy of the document that the...
No, Mr. Romano is busy making copies.
Okay, fine.
So, he can say that. I know you determined not to go to the determination, but we are determined that you will. So,
and I determined this is going to be a long day.
Well, I'm not sure about that. Could you speak to the salient points of your briefing notes? I know you've given us a briefing note, and essentially you're saying, well, everything that you need to know is in my briefing notes. And that being the case, there's no need for you to brief us. But just even if you just pick out the salient points, Mr. Labuschagne.
Chairperson, please. At present, as far as the Chapter 9, all the members of Chapter 9 institutions, as well as the Public Protector and Auditor General are concerned, different procedures and different functionaries play a role in respect of the determination of the remuneration, benefits, condition of employment. So what this bill seeks to do is to create a uniform procedure in respect of the determination of all those, let's call it Chapter 9 institutions or members of Chapter 9 institutions, by involving the Independent Remuneration Commission. Independent Commission for the Remuneration of Public Office Bearers. What we propose is that the President still determines the packages, let's in short call it packages, on the recommendation of that independent commission. So, and then to sort of create uniformity in respect of certain of the commissions or Chapter 9 institutions, we also then provide that the packages may not be adversely altered. So that in short Jefferson said, so the whole idea is to create a uniform procedure to determine their salaries, but that does not necessarily mean that they will now all of a sudden be on the same level. So the independent commission may still, so for example, for the human rights commission's members, this is their salary, and for the general commission, they or it may determine a either higher or lower salary package. So in short, Jefferson, that is the main intention of the bill.
All right, Ms. Lutz first.
I had a quick read through it when it came through online. It looked fine to me. I'm sorry you didn't use my phrase, whereas there is a hangover disparity between them. And I thought that you did it far more elegantly, deeper into the text. So I don't pretend to have studied it in any depth, but it looks fine to me, and I wonder if we couldn't start considering it.
There will be adverts. Yes, it's a requirement, Mrs. Schaefer. I'm sorry. I do apologize.
And it's the best thing we did in almost the best thing we did in the Constitution, in the public participation.
All right. Just wanted to, is there anybody else who wants to make a comment or ask a question on this? All right. You, Mr. Lubstaffney, I take it you've considered this. Don't think there's a need for a constitutional amendment.
What?
No, I'm asking. No, I'm asking Mr. Lubstaffney. No, we're dealing with determination of remuneration. Does it?
Is that we've never done it. It was in 219 from the start, and we've never given effect to it, which is why there's the hang of the disparity.
Jefferson, yes, on that point, section 219 of the Constitution, especially section 219.5, provides that national legislation must establish frameworks for determining the salaries, allowances, and benefits of judges, the public, the director, the ordinary member, and members of any commission provided for in the Constitution, including the broadcasting authority, which is in CASA, referred to section 192. Mm-hmm. So this bill seems to give effect to some extent to section 295. And sorry, I may just also add that the bill was published in the Government Gazette for public comments. We have received a lot of comments, but as you mentioned, it is beyond certain, or a few court cases, the obligation of this committee to also invite public comments from the parliamentary side. And we will then, depending on what comments are received, will be or the committee will be further considered the bill.
Absolutely. Maybe as a matter of curiosity, in the ministerial executive cycle, is it proper to ask who those positions were from? You've obviously taken them on board to the degree that you agreed with them. But as a matter of interest, are you free to tell us who those were from?
Subject to correction, I don't have my complete file here, but I think we received approximately 15 plus comments from the Independent Commission, Minister of Finance, Public Protector, basically all the affected institutions.
And that no doubt explains why you've done quite a varied treatment of each body. You've done the necessary changes to each seminar.
Was there opposition to it from those bodies?
Chairperson, not as far as I can recall, although there was a view that we should not only cover chapter 9 in this law, but also other institutions, such as chapter 10. Chapter 10, for example, and the Trans-African Language Board, and also the Useful Demarcation Board, but the decision was, or it was deemed appropriate at this stage to only cover chapter 9 institutions, and that we will then address those other institutions at the later stage in view of the urgency of this matter.
Well, oh, those people. Them too, Mr. Olivisa. Yeah. Yes, yes. Yeah, actually, you may be right. I don't see why not.
Okay,
I mean, the principle is politicians shouldn't be determining these things.
Let's just do what's in 219, what has been there since 1996. Can we just do this thing now? It's shameful that we haven't been done, that it hasn't been done. Let's just do what the Constitution says now. And just anything else anybody wants to do, they can do it. Let's.
There are other acts, obviously, Public Protector Act, Human Rights Commission Act, which we're amending. How is that going to affect the new, let's say, Human Rights Commission Bill? Is that all, Mr. Rumsfeld? Are you able to tell us?
Chairperson, yes. In this, I call it the Determination Bill.
Right.
In that bill, it's proposed that the existing, I think, section, section of the Human Rights Commission Act be substituted. So, from a technical point of view, it's complicated in the sense that we don't know which of these two bills will be passed by Parliament first. So if the Human Rights Commission bill is passed first, then it will be no problem. But if the Determination bill is passed first, then the clause in the Human Rights Commission bill will be, let's call it, outdated. So from a technical point of view, that is a sort of problem. But that's all that I can tell the community.
More correctly, it's when the President signs the new charter. I'm saying that, Mr. Levesque, because a lot of people honestly believe that once the National Assembly gives its approval, you know, the matter is law and legitimate. But anyway, that's just by the by. Alright. And then one other question, if I may. On page 2, the Independent Commission sends a notice to Parliament for approval. Parliament must approve the notice, whether in whole or in part, or disapprove the notice. Now, I take it Parliament's not going to go through this process that we follow of calling for submissions, because that would have been done by the Independent Commission. Is that understood clearly? That's how I understand it. I trust others are going to understand it that way. Sometimes we assume these things, and
we
find ourselves in all manner of trouble.
You're right, and I would trust that it would work just as it works for the executive and parliamentarian. We have to sign on, agree to the president's salary, and the president has to agree to ours. And it's that simple a step. So, but let's make sure that it is that simple for this one.
All right. Anything else on the list? No.
Since we now have the last few copies.
Yes. Yes. All right. As I said, adverts will go out, calling for written submissions, and then we'll take it from there. Okay. Good. We have your clean copy, Mr. Lanskaffi. Doesn't want to be here. Well, he has our sympathies, but
no, Jefferson, if you look at the weather, I don't mind to be here. I believe how things are a bit worse than Cape Town today.
This is nice. Yes, this is lovely weather.
That's why I say I don't mind to be in Cape Town.
Oh, so you'd be out, perfectly outside and here with us.
Yeah.
Yes, well, we have our sympathy. All right. Is there anything that you wish to point out to us in the clean copy?
Jefferson, as I mentioned earlier, I worked through my notes as well as the minutes of committee meetings as published on PNG's website dated 25 March, 31 May, 21 August, 14 August, and I think 18 September. And I tried to capture in this document all the proposals that were made, where the committee gave me specific instructions to either insert or delete. I've done that. Where individual members of the committee made certain proposals. I've captured that by means of options, and you will also know that key issues have been flagged by the committee itself. So I think that is basically and I've also where the Human Rights Commission made certain proposals, I also prepared options as far as that those options of those proposals are concerned. So I just want to make sure the document that has now been distributed on page 2, is it numbered JL01-09-30. As far as the preamble is concerned, then Mr. Jeffrey said that we don't use the S anymore, so I substituted the S with since.
No. All right.
But Jefferson, if you look at the footnote, the point has been raised that the preamble merely states what is really contained in the Constitution. Desirability thereof is therefore questioned. The matter requires further consideration by discussion by the committee. In other words, whether we should repeat the wording of the Constitution in the preamble, or whether we should shorten it and just make reference to the specific relevant sections of the Constitution. I have not prepared an option as far as that is concerned, but that's for the committee to decide.
All right, Honourable Members, that's please make a note of that, all right? Essentially, the question that arose this much and the rest of you was, do we really need this preamble? But,
I don't know, stupid. But surely it's a simple style question or precedent question. What do we do nowadays? Isn't there a standard way in which we draft? By explicit reference or by explicit reference to those sections or by repeating them? But surely by now we have evolved a practice in this regard.
Listen, I think as far as that is concerned, my colleague who is from the office of the Chief State Advisor and who she is dealing with much more laws than I am, maybe she will be able to give an indication of the answer to that question.
The dates in the preamble is actually capturing what is contained in section 181, which is in the constitution, the relevant chapter 10, because it forms the basis of this legislation. For our side, there shouldn't be a problem, you know. It's just a standard format, it depends on the committee whether they want to have a preamble. For our side, it shouldn't be a problem because we're not capturing the Constitution word for word. It's just a summary given outside of what this bill is all about.
And for my taste, I would like to.
Mr. Holland Minister, and then Mr. Schroff.
I also like to be able to say something about the policy. I just also want to say something about
Comment.
Yeah. You see, I think it would be desirable that when you look at the as an act of the South African Parliament, you can just tell by the manner in which it is formulated. Now if we are going to some base whereas some act of those who have whereas therefore and so on, then in other we have to I think the success to find a way that is going to standardize our law. Must not be as a game of how we feel as a particular political community or even as a movement. But the point should be.
I think the point was raised in previous meetings, and those of you who were there will back me up or not, that no one uses whereas. Something we've inherited from the British, and that then in keeping with our striving for simple language in law, the whereas should be dropped, and that should spread to other portfolio committees of Parliament. Whether that's going to be done, Mr. Holland says, is quite another matter.
I know that you can do that, you need to
show
it.
No.
I agree with
it doesn't mean we've inherited them, we must keep them.
Yeah.
I have to recognize this is a swap before separate issue. All right, Ms. Smart.
No, just to say, clearly it's desirable that it should be standardized, that it's Parliament who should take this decision. I'm not much as we appreciate and esteem them, not the federal advisors or the departmental lawyers. It's Parliament that must decide at some point. And I'm not sure what the correct forum is to take a decision such as this. I think it is true that whatever the Justice Committee does will set the practice. For myself, I regret losing a word like whereas. But that is the way we have the intention to go.
I'm just interested in the first paragraph of the preamble, the reference to the interim constitution. and for completeness sake it might well be desirable, because that's when the Human Rights Commission was established, but 181 actually says establishment in terms of the 1996 constitution. Is that then going to be the practice that one, when one deals with legislation relating to Chapter 9 constitution and other one, one has to refer back to the interim constitution every time when it was actually first established? One presumes so, but it just makes quite complex reading. But I suppose for completeness sake it is necessary. It's not, I'm not objecting to it. I'm just interested that the 1996 constitution speaks about the establishment of the institutions, whereas it was already established under the interim constitution.
But isn't that old point? The fact that the law is so old, it's the 1994 Act, and that in the transitional provisions we provided for the continuation of all sorts of, but that's what's being done here. It's not anything else. It's just you have to recognize the fact that there, A, there was an interim constitution, the body was created under it. B, in the transitional provisions, the thing was allowed to survive. And that's why we are here only now changing an act that is out of date. I think you have to do this just to keep track.
Do we actually say why we're passing this new legislation? Is that necessary? That's probably in the memorandum at the end, I presume. But is it necessary not to say why we are in the bill itself, I suppose? I just want to check my memorandum that they had set out, if I remember correctly, the need. Numerous amendments go down to a redrafting of the Act. So it's not, is it, the question is it not necessary to refer in the preamble to that need? Probably not, I suppose, if the memorandum covers it.
The question Mr. Swart is raising is, shouldn't we take what is in 1.2 of the memorandum and make it part of the preamble? Is that your question?
That's correct. We don't ask anything.
Give context to someone reading this bill, because if you read this bill and you compare it to the existing human rights bill, you won't understand why is there this new piece of legislation. I suppose the answer is you read the memorandum. But should one not have something in the preamble that says, bearing in mind the numerous amendments, therefore it is necessary to...
I rather like that. It seems to make sense. No one worries about the memorandum,
yeah. That's a valid point, because once the Act has been assented by the President and it comes into operation, there's no memorandum. So maybe what I'll do is I'll prepare an option indicating why this new Act is necessary. In the memorandum, it's clearly stated that the existing Act is based on the 1991 Constitution, and the purpose is to bring it in line with the new Constitution, as well as to address certain issues that have in the meantime come up. So, but I will prepare an option.
That would pretty nicely be
in the preamble.
That would pretty nicely between paragraphs 1 and 2. It would link the interim constitution and explain why it was to be.
Alright, so there will be an option there. Okay, good enough. Anything else? There? No. H3? There are several options there.
Okay.
Sorry, it's following me, sir.
From the same point that raising, if you look at the, what do you call the device in the old time, it provides for the composition, power to function. It looks like, it seems as if we are creating this thing for the first time ever. And I hear that sister, what is such a, this is the explanation of what I'm sure come under the two numbers. But it seems as if to me, from, should be there on top. Yeah. Because here we are, well, just updating the framework in terms of which the commission will compose and function. But now if you just look at it, it seems as if for the first time we are setting up this commission. It was not there before. I know under the preamble there is reference to the fact that in 1 section 1 is one of our providing for this. I think it's sort of misleading anything without it being in reference to what the system has. I'm considering therefore that they must think they can apply their mind to that if they formally then want to
see where you want to place that.
All right, fair enough. Yes, ma'am.
Hi, it must be noted that this bill is going to replace the current act.
Mm-hmm.
While we're going to repeal that act, the current act is going to be repealed. So we're taking what is contained in that act and put it in the bill. The long title is explaining what is the bill is all about, what is the act, the Human Rights Commission is all about, what is the intention. It sets out the purpose of the act. So the purpose of the act is to provide for the composition power function. I understand the confusion from the honorable member to say it appears as if we are creating it for the first time, whatever is already in place. But it should be reflected in the long term, otherwise there will be a gap in the legislation because the current act will be replaced if one is in effect. So the main is to replace, we're repealing the current act and it will replace that this bill. So this bill will take over. So everything that is there should also be reflected in the bill. When it becomes a law, so that there's no gap in the legislation.
Should the long title not say that this bill is replacing the current act? That's the point Mr. Holmes is making.
You
can
never do that. Because this other one, the termination of the election, long time ago, is to amend the public protection act to human rights commission rights and all of these other acts. Now, if we're doing something to an existing gift, either by incorporating this provision or by scheme, I think it was consistent with what I'm saying regarding this other scheme. Then we also mentioned that.
Shouldn't it say, Ms. Smuts, before I recognize, shouldn't it say somewhere in the long title to repeal the Human Rights Commission Act No. 54 of 1994?
Mm.
That's what it's doing, amongst other things.
Okay, but surely with respect to that side that we're doing this in order to repeal, you're doing it for other purposes.
Sure.
And the repeal is a consequence of that.
No. It says to provide for the composition powers, etc., etc., and to repeal. I don't know. I'm just trying to follow Mr. Holomisa's logic and reasoning.
Common, even in other fields.
Yes.
So, look, there are amendment acts and there are new acts which have in their schedule. The whole schedule of repeals. I mean, what is the purpose of this law? The purpose is to provide for the composition balance function.
And the purpose is to repeal the 1934 Act. All right.
And to substitute, the 1994 Act. But I mean, do we ever do that? You don't. You just write the new thing and make the appeal in the schedule.
Because if we want to go that way, then the wrong title will be, we have to then give more details to clearly then indicate what exactly is the intention of the goal to provide for the composition, chairperson, special chairpersons, staff, all those things. And I think the second last clause, that is clause 25, makes it clear that the existing act will be repealed. So I personally, I don't think it's necessary to address that issue in the wrong title.
Okay. All right. Mr. Oliver, so you'd like to make your arguments and persuade everyone.
Yeah, my problem is lack of quantification.
Okay.
The non-essential thinking here is the formative function also because why not legislate for our time to follow it? What's next? But they must understand from the onset what this stage is upon. And because the person, you know that there's a commission that was made before. What happened to that one? Must we go plow through the deal? The second thing is because he's making the example of a long title having to mention the election and the functioning of the commission. That is already covered, but I say provide for composition, power, function, and functioning. But an important matter is of the extent of the commission that is in the operation. And I think we should have an intention as to what's happening with that one.
As we're going to amend the preamble, won't that be with that particular aspect?
Yeah, that's why we're saying that, and that's why you agreed with me that they must find an appropriate name for that next question.
Okay.
Surely that could be covered in the amendment in the first paragraph where you refer to the 93 constitution, established in terms of the 93 and confirmed in the 96, something like that. Mm-hmm. So it's clear that it was established earlier in the constitution.
Going to do us an option for the preamble, and then we'll see whether that suffices. Is all right?
Chairperson, yes. On this point, initially, we'll have the provision in the heading was continuation of the commission, which sort of indicated that the commission established under the 1993 constitution continues to exist, but that provision has been, or that clause has been deleted by the ward advisors, but we will, between us, we will, in the preamble, try to capture all the arguments that have been raised here.
Okay. All right. I think you wanted to say something there? No?
To say we can still provide in the long title, we can still amend it and add, you know, something like to say to the Human Rights Commission Act, so that we can also, because this is the purpose of this piece, we are going to repeat it.
Yes.
Substituted with this, so we can also put it in the long title, add it there.
Yes.
The long title is for this to justify the thing.
You've persuaded us. Yeah. All right. Anything else on page 2? No? Page 3? Mm-hmm. options there.
The committee at the previous meeting indicated that those dealing with submission of what the commission made the first present national center and other relevant body as far as the reports are concerned. The committee at the previous meeting indicated that that clause must be deleted, which then resulted in various or changes to references to certain sections. But the first option on page 3 that has been proposed by the commission itself, where it says commission means the South African Unionist Commission in 13 section 121B and 184 of the Constitution, and then the commission proposes that it insert the words "and is composed of members appointed in terms of section 5. Personally, I don't think that the insertion of those words are necessary, because I mean the commission, we have already said the commission consists of members, 11 members, so that's something for the committee to decide on, but I've included this option because it was a proposal by the commission itself.
Mr. Schaefer?
I don't really see why we need to say that. I mean, the whole goal sets out who's going to be part of the commission. I mean, as long as it says it's that it's in terms of the constitution, I'm sure that should be fine.
Yeah, the Principal Act doesn't give a definition of member. So I suppose the question is, why did you see fit to include a definition of member in the bill?
Because there are so many references to member in the bill itself, and member and member of staff, and to distinguish between the two.
All right, fair enough. Well, it depends on you. This option is proposed by the commission itself. Why? Can you recall why, Mr. Lumsden? I mean, I can't, to be honest with you.
We can just get the presentation.
The department's response was that the addition of these words appears to be unnecessary. No motivation has been given for this proposal.
No, but we want is the commission's motivation.
No, I'm saying the department's saying that there was no motivation given by the commission.
Oh, so they proposed something without making motivation for it. Mr. Oliver.
So that if the Human Rights Commission is opposed to the white member to substitute it with the white commission,
that's another option, Mr. Lapscott.
Chairperson, to come back to the first issue, in the presentation that the Human Rights Commission they said commission means blah blah blah, add the words "and is composed of members appointed in terms of section 5 and that's where they stop. So that's why in my summary of all the comments I said no motivation was given. As far as the issue of substituting the word
the word commissioner, I have not yet to get an option, because that will mean if people want to pay an option cost that is concerned, it means that many of the clauses in the bill will have to be amended. So I need the committee's guidance on that issue. I do not want to prepare unnecessary options if the committee decides to stay or stick to the word member, or if the committee refers to the commissioner, then I will have to prepare options to the various section clauses and sub clauses.
What say you, honourable members?
I really don't think it's necessary to say only composed of members appointed. I mean, it's established in terms of the Constitution, in terms of Clause 5, it says the Commission consists of 11 members or commissioners, whatever we're going to decide. So I don't think it's necessary.
The point Mr. Labiscotti was making, Mr. Schaefer, is where it says in the book, under Clause 5, sub-laws, the Commission consists of 11, should it be members, or 11 commissioners?
I don't think it matters whether we call it members or commissioners. We can debate that issue, but can we just finish the first point in the option as to what we're going to say about the commission?
So the Human Rights Commission proposal, you're not in favour?
No.
Okay. It's stating the obvious.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
They are members of the committee. They are members of staff.
Yes.
So they are members of the commission.
And that's a body on
earth. And that by using the word commission, I might be differentiating between other personalities.
Yes.
And those of staff.
Yes.
And those of the members of the committee. That maybe it would become a kind of communication.
Why a conversation? But it does make it clearer, does it not? Yes. Yeah, they don't call one another members. Member Prince, Member Mushwana. They say Commissioner. All right. See? You have an instruction, Mr. Lebeskopi.
Substitute
member for commissioner.
Commissioner. I just want to call the committee's attention to the Constitution. Section 1931. The public protector and the members of any commission. Members of any commission.
Going to Constitution.
We'll slip that amendment in at the last clause in this book. To be honest, without having really considered this issue, I do not really foresee any problems if we substitute member with the commission, but that will then require a lot of other consequential amendments. And we will then also have to start off by amending the definition. We will then have to delete the definition of
member. Yes.
And
all that other discussion we've had, that falls away as well.
Yeah.
Mrs. Schaefer?
It does make somewhat sense to be consistent with the Constitution, I think.
How is it inconsistent?
By changing the terminology. I mean, otherwise, we should say the member, the commissioners are members as referred to in section whatever of the Constitution, perhaps. But, you know, it is better generally in legislating to have the same terminology in various places.
See, the Constitution is dealing with more than one commission. And I think for purposes of practicality, they saw fit to refer to a member of a commission. Commission is the one with the long title.
Commissioner, the fine commissioner as a member in terms of section whatever of the Constitution.
I can't see a problem because the Constitution is referring to several commissions.
Yeah. The problem came in under section 16 at sub 9, where we had no person may disclose to the other person, where we had to say member or staff.
Yes.
And now we have to say commissioner or member or staff.
Staff, which makes it clear.
As a member referred to in section 192 of the Constitution.
Confusion, because we're talking about these views, the current view, and when you're talking about the commission, we have to make a reference to clause 5, which is dealing with the commission. Of commissioners. I'm not sure if it is correct if we can refer it to the Constitution rather than making a reference to the relevant section in the bill, which is fine, which is dealing with the Constitution.
Because Mr. Lovescraftney raised the point that in the Constitution it refers to members, not to commissioners. So we need to just clarify in this bill that when we say commissioner, it means a member in terms of that clause of the Constitution. You can also refer to the other side as well, I suppose. Just so that you know that that's what we're meaning, because we're not using the same word member.
Okay. Have you got it, Mr. Lovescraftney?
Take this in this off. I'm just not sure. issue of whether we seeking the definition of commissioner then make reference to the constitution, whether we should only make reference to clause 5 of the law. Personally, I think we don't have to refer to the or make reference to the constitution only to clause 5 of the law.
Yeah, I didn't see the need, but the members feel strongly that they should be in reference to the commission.
Which members? The commissioners? Sorry.
You too. We too as you. No, you're not commissioners.
Of the magistrate's commission.
Members of the magistrate's commission.
Yeah, the reason why I said that was because Mr. Lovescuffy was the one who raised the point that it refers to member in the constitution. So how do we now know that the commissioner is the same thing as those members that we're referring to in the constitution? That's my point. You're the one who raised it.
Yeah, but I raised that issue not to be difficult. to show that the constitution also refers to members of commissions, but surely. If we substitute or if we define commissioner, I will reconsider the issue, but personally I don't think at this point in time that we need to refer to the constitution. We can only refer to that, I think it's clause 5 of the Bill of the Moment.
So you're saying Mrs. Schaefer has just not persuaded you otherwise, having raised the problem yourself.
He didn't want us to change the
men. Yes. Yes. Listen, in terms of the constitution, I'm going to make use of my.
All right.
Now, I will prepare two options for the court committee. One where we refer to the constitution, and one without reference to the constitution.
But clearly referring to them as commissioners does away with this discussion we've had about members and confusion, I guess. I agree with you, Ms. Smuts. Please speak to your fellow members. Ms. Smuts, please speak to your fellow members. And I'm not referring to Mrs. Schaefer alone.
I mean, I wasn't part of your discussion. What position have you arrived at? There's two commissioners.
All right. Okay. So that'll resolve the second option. On page 3, it's the love discussion. Okay. Option at the bottom there. Yes, that's the implication.
Before we get to that point, as far as the definition of organ of state is concerned, the committee at the previous occasion indicated that we should speak to the definition or reference to section 239 of the constitution and the petition to read and includes any other statutory body or functionary. I don't know whether that is still the view of the committee. That's under the definition of all our statement.
Yes, the statutory body or functionary would be fall under the same thing.
Then there was also a suggestion that we should only limit that to executive organs of state. So that comes in further in the bill. So I don't know whether we should then amend this definition to say executive organs of state, or whether we should keep the organs of state here and then further on make it executive organs of state.
Okay, now that's a serious point. Now just remind. We should come back to the definition. In fact, we shouldn't start with the definition. But remind me where the concept organs of state comes into play.
14 sub 4. It says that I asked if there is any other reference to organs of state in the bill that you are aware of.
Yep.
So then 14 4 is the executive.
Yeah, and we wanted it to be executive.
what he suggested there was just the insertion of the word all executive privileges.
Correct.
Under 14.4. So that's not why we needed
such
a definition.
And in fact, who's got the constitution there? So executive organs you'll find in a slightly a few steps back from 2.3.
Two steps back.
But only in subsection A. Now, the numbering makes it difficult.
Yes, page 16, all executive organs of state. All right.
And in fact, what we should do then in the definition is not to use organ of state at all, but simply say an executive organ of state means any department of state or administration in the national, provincial, or local sphere of government.
There are other
differences, yes. Hence, we need a definition.
So it's not 14.4 only.
Well,
yeah,
that's where executive organs are.
All right, but I suggest we come back to this definition then when we've got 14.4.
All right.
Because you were switching the small stuff. This is not
the
small stuff.
They've been naughty, you know. All right. Sorry, Mr. Lambskakni. Then, as Ms. Max is right, we shouldn't have started with the definition.
Mm.
And we should have gone straight on to clause 1. Clause 2.
Now that we're in the
word. Yeah, let's finish. Okay.
Premises is only relevant if search and seizure remains. So we'll come back to that. But we certainly don't want the one with a road in it. That's the one that came out of telecoms legislation. So just take out that.
You need to read the footnote, please, before you rush to take it out.
I wouldn't ever use permission on gender equality. Sorry, what road is the Human Rights Commission going to search and
seize?
Toll Road. Toll, Chapman's Peak.
Very well done.
Chapman's Peak.
Okay. Counting no gantries.
No, forget about counting. Chapman's Peak.
Hot Toll is an example of infringement of fundamental human rights.
So does the road stay or come out?
I could still take it out.
It's consistent with other pieces of legislation, Christine. Yes, it includes. Yeah.
And land already includes a road.
Yes. Land
or
the road.
Do you need to dig trenches to lay cables?
Yes,
you've
got to dig in the road to see where the optic fiber cable has been installed.
That's
or not.
Why you need roads. And
there
also,
you go.
That's why in telecom legislation, I think, don't need it. Yeah.
For the
gantry. Yes, it carries a load.
Take it out.
Yes, Mr. Oliver, that was the concern, Mr. Lutz. If a new commission is appointed and they just feel, well, we don't like this place, we want to go to Bloom. Now, in that situation, you know, that's when the concern arose. You know, who should decide? Should it be the commission or somebody else? But I agree with Mr. Oliver, so we already have seats. Is it necessary for all this?
Chairperson, at one of the previous meetings, you also raised this issue. And you also mentioned that if they decide to move their seat, it will have financial implications.
Yes.
So, surely somebody needs to decide maybe on the recommendation of the commission, but personally I don't think the National Assembly should be involved, because I don't think the Assembly should be involved in those kind of issues.
But Mr. Lavascati, you're avoiding the point we just raised. Shouldn't we say the seat is where it is now? It's in what, Bromfontein, Johannesburg?
Personally, I don't think you can in this situation, or maybe you can, but I think it's totally inappropriate to say that the seat of the commission is in Johannesburg. If someday it's been
the High Court. We said the people of the High Court would be at such a place. Why would we just do the same thing?
I wouldn't
say it's in Brantford and Johannesburg, but let's just say it's in the other.
Fine, whatever. But the point is, the seat has been established. Yes, and it's a good idea in that situation, Mr. Lovestuffy, to have to amend the Act. Because then we'll be able to question who wants to move the seat. Where do you want to go to? Kukenau. Oh, really?
But you achieve exactly the same effect by taking option two. So you're silent on where it is now, but if you say the seat of the Commission must be determined by the NA, that means if they decide, Osprakashna Bloemfontein to, that they have to then come and get our agreement. And we are the right body because we are the people who vote their money and who quite soon are going to put their money on the following, on the assemblies and budget votes. So I think it's difficult. I think we can do just option two. If the Commission has been determined by the National Assembly, it implies that should they wish to change it, they would have to have the agreement of the assembly.
I think they're opposed to it.
No,
they want
to locate
the office. They?
No,
the Rights Commission may want it, but I am telling you there are other people who are commissioners and what have you. I don't want to name them who are not in favor.
Yeah, I'm sure. But look, it just underscores the point. Don't now go and nail something down which can't be changed without changing the Act, because you know as well as I do that the big shit. So, just say the German side of the thing.
So, well, the point that's now arisen is what happens when the lease expires?
I think option one is get there for the speed of the commission, but only
we flag this one. Well, there's no agreement, so what do you do?
No, it's not opposed to me, I think.
Carries it out.
the president appoints the commissioners on the advice of the assembly, then he has to do what we say. But you can't have chapter 9s running around telling the president this is what you will now declare by executive act. Are you silent about the matter?
No. What happens when the lease expires?
They take a new one.
Oh. Assuming that the landlord or the owner of the seat now says, no, I want you out. Which could happen.
What's the problem? Can
I get a new one? Yes, but how? Who decides?
The Treasury regulation says, if you remember from certain other proceedings, one of the Treasury regulations says the CEO of a constitutional institution can undertake leases without limitation.
Sure. Wow. That's dangerous. No, we're not sweating. We wanted to move on, and you said, no. Decide now.
Yes.
Well, I think Ms. Solomon said, let's assume that when this lease expires and the owner wants them out, theoretically.
No, I mean as the fellow invoices you.
Because it involves money.
And the thing doesn't mean the building is going to be city, right? So I call this lease expires, what's the difficulty is all good. Tell
them. Yes.
The
seat of the commission is in Haute. Done. Personally, I like the idea that they own the building and will help you out.
Yes, that's not what's on the table.
No, it's not. Gauteng? Yes. Seat of the commission is in Gauteng. Done, Mr. Lamskafni. Do we need a reason? Okay. Yeah, sub 2 remains as it is, obviously. Is in Gauteng. An amendment to the Act. Yes. People who made the law will decide.
That's the reason for putting it in the law. They can't. You don't run around the menu.
All right. Clause 4. Why did we spell A out? Can anyone remind us? Is it because it's stating the obvious, Mr. Swart?
Commission is independent.
In the Constitution.
So we don't have to put it there. Okay.
No, I think that was the, when I wrote to the members of PNG, that was one of the reasons that the committee decided to delete the
Bill
of Rights because it already contained in the Constitution.
Fair enough.
Although the UNAS Commission
wants it kept there.
Wants it.
Yes, I know. Comes out. Well, the rest of the clause deals with independence and impartiality. Yeah. Correct? Okay.
Citizen, yes, there's only one issue which the committee needs to consider, and that is footnote 12. Just find it.
Yes. Position of privileges to gain or benefit another person improperly.
Yeah, and if you then look at footnote 12, Jefferson, you ask in this case that commissioners must make known their interest to the speaker.
Yeah.
But that's something that I haven't prepared an option because I don't know whether the committee is in favor of such a position or.
Yes. Yes. Particularly in light of recent events.
Yes,
no. It's
not?
Yeah,
no, I think looking at that.
I
also, but
reasons why we shouldn't have that.
Yeah, I mean, your alternative would be to go to the chapter 9 review. The recommendation is that they must all have provision for commissioners declaring their interest in exactly the same way as we do or it does now. But then the additional requirement would be that those things should be on a website or publicly
available.
Whether you should go so far as to say that they must be lodged with a speaker, I don't know. I mean, what we lodge them with our own institution in the form of the
Zidane put on the website.
And put on the website. In the case of the judges, I'm sure the separate branches said they
also be on the website.
It's their own website.
Yeah, he's going to have a website.
But each institution, you know, must,
yeah.
What you just want to make sure is that they do declare and that those declarations are publicly available, that the transparency is on there.
And that's what we're saying here.
Yeah, and I'm not so sure that there should be a requirement that it should be lodged with the speaker. These are institutions subject only to the Constitution and the law. Although they account to us, that's to me not quite the same as an administrative arrangement like this. Having to be sent to the speaker, and let's not forget the speaker is just an officer of the assembly. So are we now saying that we want to put these people's declarations of interest on the assembly's website? I don't think so. I don't think that's proper. They are independent institutions, but they must declare and they must observe transparency in making their declarations available.
So they should have a register of commissioners' interests.
Absolutely.
Yes.
And I think that's already there.
Well, I'm not sure that it is. Mrs. Schenker?
No, I agree. I don't think it should go to the speaker. I mean, the judges are independent and they have their interests with the chief justice. And I think it's in the following that same principle, retaining independence, it should be lodged somehow with their, maybe the CEO even. I don't know if that's appropriate. But yeah, publicly available. But then who keeps the one, the confidential question? That's what we need to look at. The chairperson, maybe. Maybe the chairperson?
Yeah.
I mean, we've got an administrative person to whom we lodge our stuff. So, I mean, perhaps they could be lodged with the CEO.
Yeah, they're just lodged.
Yeah.
There's nothing to have to require.
Well, that's what we want to put here, Mrs. Watts. And the question is, should we put it in? And I think the answer is yes. And which further answers the Commission's question is whether commissioners should be entitled to hold business interests. Quite obviously, the answer is yes.
So, those who serve full time are not. If you, what do you mean by business interests? You hold stock shares in the financial holding.
Yes. That was a question they asked us to answer.
Should members be entitled to hold business interests? Their ability to provide their full and then they have to claim that interest to the speaker.
Well, the speaker part we've discussed.
I think that, yeah. But yes, I mean, they are as entitled as anybody else to hold financial interests.
Okay.
Yeah, I think the important thing is that the
must reflect them. Yes.
So if they hide it,
then they're in trouble. Okay. All right, Mr. Love Stanley.
Jeff, listen, just to summarize this discussion, I said they must pay their interest. How can we?
Must declare their interest and make them publicly available.
Yeah, but shouldn't they need to declare to somebody? They can't declare to the chairperson what about the chairperson? And what if somebody, one of the commissioners, do not declare their interest, what's going to happen? Will that be internal proceedings? So, this matter is not that simple. I think the committee need to look at the decision has been made that they must declare their interests.
Mm-hmm. Which means they may have interests.
Yes, but my question is they must declare to somebody. And if they do not declare or refuse to declare, what's going to happen? Then we'll have to build in the proceedings and steps and all those kind of things. So,
you're not going to try to criminalize me. All you say is that commissioners must declare their interests and that the commission must ensure that these declarations are publicly, or if you wish to include some qualification about confidential, available, beschikbaar. And you're certainly not going to create an offence or something like that. Whether it becomes a matter of misconduct, that depends on the answers we're going to get from Kyle Muffet on the whole regulation deal. Because I think the Chapter 9 is due to the credit its own misconduct procedures, etc. It's for them to sort the thing out. Yeah. But what you say in the law is that they must, the commissioners must declare, and the commission must ensure that such declaration is publicly available.
First, Mr. Hollander, and then you, Mr. Swart.
What is the role of the office avoiding
Institute supporting democracy.
Inviting the custodianship of the agents.
There's an option.
That's what I wanted to ask.
What is the objection to disclosing to the speaker? Because that's what the Human Rights Commission suggests. What is the objection to that, seeing that we are the account, they come to us? Otherwise, they're the closest. We the closest, or the speaker the closest body to that.
No, that's why do you say he must answer to us? He's simply the custodian.
He's an officer of the 400 MPs.
What? Is he one of them who asked us to disclose to?
No. I think you're assuming that because we're saying the speaker, then that means we're going to come in here before us to answer. That's not the point.
No.
It's custodianship.
What happens if we want to find out some information that's in there that becomes relevant to us? The speaker has no obligation to come to speak to us at all. That
no, we say it must be made public.
And that's what you're talking about, the Assembly's website is not appropriate. These are independent institutions, that's wrong. If they come to us specifically for what it says in 181.5, the performance of their functions, but that doesn't mean that we now manage them and put their declarations onto the Assembly's website. Or ask us just for the moment to, you know, I mean, they are independent. Vacancies arise in commissions, nobody does anything about it. The gender commission sits with our commissioners for ages. It's to make sure that that kind of thing runs smoothly. It's to make sure that when the Human Rights Commission produces its many excellent reports on socioeconomic issues, blah, 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 that they don't just get ignored. So you think that it's convenient, like a channel to MPs. They have no original powers of any description whatsoever. The only people who have powers are the 400 MPs. We as a committee are an organ of the 400 MPs. Only the 400 MPs make any decisions. The office has it's nobody's boss, just like the speaker is nobody's master. It's there to help everything run administratively, smoothly.
Yes. It's an administrative function that we. Can I make a suggestion to you, Mr. Labuschagne? We have the Independent Electoral Commission. We have the Public Protector. Commission for Gender Equality, the one with the long title, all of them. Can you go and see how they handle such matters, including failure to declare?
It's only the second line review
I want Mr. Labuschagne to check that. I'm not going to the chapter 9 review. I want Mr. Labuschagne to tell us what these other bodies do presently, right? We know that the Human Rights Commission are required, I beg your pardon, the Independent Electoral Commissioners are required to declare. But the question then remains is to whom do they declare in each case, and in the event of a failure or refusal to declare, what then occurs?
I suspect that they probably don't declare it all, but I mean, can we maybe think along the lines of that I don't think the Parliament isn't the appropriate body. They should have their own enlightenment. Can we maybe think along the lines of must declare their interest in the matters determined by the Commissioner themselves? They must provide in the legislation that they have to establish a suitable procedure to declare their interest, to make them publicly available. Save in the event that a confidential section is agreed to or required, you know, along the lines of MPs and judges.
All right, then I'm okay with that. No, hang on a second. Who has access to the confidential section?
Well, that's
MP's confidential section is set down in the code. Was it a mom of the registrar?
Yeah, but that's really determined by the code. It's determined
yes.
By that.
Yes.
So they can do the same.
Right.
They can designate the award another official in or another agency to either confirm or
that. But in the event of a complaint or an allegation,
person responsible for the confidential section will then be asked, for example, by the public sector or the Justice Portfolio Committee, please inform us whether this particular shareholding was declared at the principal week. Simply to confirm or deny.
I find they all have provisions. I will never answer for the CTE, but the others already have stuff in place, so it will probably be useful to see what is best practice
in the accounting act, or is it in regulations or treasury regulations? I don't know.
Look, it's certainly dealt with in ICASA, because it's the multi-billion bucks and all this stuff going on. It's when there's a not the register, but what's in there is what's probably in all the others. It's you have to declare if you have a conflict of interest before you sit on a matter. That's going to find most of that. The register probably not. You're going to find it in the administrative arrangements of all of these bodies. There's nothing in the CSA. It might be treasury regulations. But look, I suppose it would be useful to get best practice.
Because we've done it for the judges, why not for these Chapter 9 institutions? Sorry, Mr. Lovis. I need you to do that exercise for us, please. Brilliant. You see? Thinking outside the box. It's 12:30. Yes. Can we break for lunch? And reconvene at 2 o'clock. Thank you. In the restaurant where you normally eat it. It is in time.
No. nobody was here, we were before correctional services.
Yeah, and I thought this was important for information to be.